Hello, 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 and welcome to episode number 39 of Five Star Potential, a weekly Foot Manager podcast brought to you by WeStream FM. On this week's pod, we'll be chatting all about the way you approach your end of season pushes. But we'll get into more of that later, because first of all, I must introduce you all to my co-hosts. We're going to start off with Mr. Friday Night FM, becoming a regular, Joe. Hello, sir.
Yes. Hello, mate. Glad to be here again.
Excellent. Mr. Dave Azzopardi, welcome.
Welcome, Matthew.
Hello. Mr. Doop, how are you, sir?
I just want to apologise for last week. I listened to it back. I was really horrible. So, welcome. Hope you're having a good day, Matt.
There we go. Nice man. Hello. This is out of character. And rounding us off, special guest, Mr. Viking Dan. Hello, sir.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm not too bad, mate. How are you?
It's been a while since your dulcet tones have graced the pod.
It has been. It's been quite a while, yeah. But I'm more than happy to take a night off from the stream.
Are you prepped and ready for the quiz later?
Oh, hell no. It's going to be a shit show as normal.
They've set a record that you must now beat, so which is a negative score. So as you are the inceptor of that rule, I'm sure you'll manage it. Anyway, save updates. Dan, start us off with how things are going in your world.
Well, I recently started a new save with Athletic Bilbao. Because I've always enjoyed doing saves where you lean on youth development and bringing players through. And obviously with Bilbao, you're really limited to the players you can bring in because you can only sign Basque players. The best way I'm going to be, well, the easiest way to do anything with the club is going to bring through youth players. So I thought it'd be like a natural thing to do. We're towards the end of the first season, challenging for top four. The board wants top seven. So yeah, it's going all right. I'm just finding myself getting increasingly more frustrated with compounding match engine issues.
How's Oscar De Marcos getting on, or did you end up selling him?
No, it's a weird one that. We started the save once, and because I'd accidentally included too many lower league Spanish leagues, it was running at the speed of fart. So I had to restart. In the first effort, we sold Oscar De Marcos for 35 million, which was great because it balanced the books. Then second time round, nobody came in for him. So we're really scrabbling around for cash at the minute. But he's been pretty good. We use inside wingbacks. I'm doing a very Bielsa style tactic with
inside wingbacks.
Inverted.
Is that a new role you've invented?
Yeah, I've. it explains why the engine's been acting so screwy. But yeah, so we've been using inverted wingbacks. We get a tune out of him, but I don't know if I'm really using him to his fullest, so that might be something we look into for the second season.
Attribute-wise, he's never looked great, but he always performs brilliantly, I've always found. I've loved him for a few years.
Yeah, he's solid. Like he doesn't let me down that often. I find him making quite a few mistakes in terms of like mistake counters, but I think that's just due to the fact that he's covering the wing and central midfield. In terms of performances, he's really good, really solid player.
I think that always seems to be the case. Like, if you look at any fullback, regardless of the role and duty you play them on, they all, because they see a lot of the ball naturally, the percentage of mistakes to sort of percentage of time on the ball is probably pretty low in comparison.
And player of the save so far?
It's tough so far. Iñaki Williams goes between being incredible and incredibly frustrating. There'll be times when he'll win a game single-handedly, and it'll be a time when he'll miss four.
I've got a message from Rez for you for Iñaki Williams, and it's do not sell him.
Really?
We was watching your stream the other night, and he went, no, don't sell him.
Nah,
so there you go, it's on the pod.
Yeah, I'm contractually obliged now. It's in the small print. He's got a 71 million release fee, and I think I'm going to try and get him to sign a new contract with a bigger one. But yeah, I think the thing is if teams are coming in for ridiculous money for those kind of players, especially because we've got in the youth squad, I've got about six or seven really talented young wingers. Eventually, when he's 25, I might be able to get about 100 million for him and might keep the club going, keep the youth academy going anyway.
Sorry, Dan, to make this feel like a press conference, but I know you've said you're going to push it through with the youth. Is there anyone, because I'm not massively knowledgeable on the Basque, but is there anyone out there that you're desperate to bring in if you do get some money?
There's a few really top players. There's Ander Herrera, Antoine Griezmann, that obviously it's going to be, I think it's going to be more on the downslope of their career. So if they're hitting their mid-30s, early 30s, might be able to pick them up at end of contracts and be really good shooters going forward. Obviously, Emerick Laporte as well, who's gone to City.
Wait, what is the Basque rule? I'm really lost thick on it.
It's that's a small region.
I thought it was
region.
Just an area in Spain, but then when you say Laporte and Griezmann, obviously they're French.
Yeah, it's a small portion in the north of Spain that does actually go over the French border as well.
Oh, right.
So
okay.
It's just players from that location. You can, in-game, I think you can bring in Spanish players under 16 or under 17, and then if they come through the academy, then you're fine doing it that way because they'll become Basque essentially. But it's just a very small region, which, like I say, which makes it like you can't help but do a homegrown challenge.
Yeah.
It's, so I do love the idea of having something so segregated to such a minute area. I think it's fantastic. I think if someone was to do a Barcelona save, I'd be tempted to try and make a team entirely of Catalans.
Well, we were discussing that on the stream, actually, about how hard it'd be to do it, because you'd have to know all the locations that were Catalan towns, Catalan cities, so you could only sign players from there, or obviously bring them through the youth academy. It'd be really fun, and it'd be cool if you could look into bringing in similar restrictions in like the in-game, well, not in the in-game editor, but the game editor. If you could put similar restrictions, like on, for example, Leeds can only have Yorkshire players, you know, for something along those lines.
Leeds can only sign players from Manchester. That'll go down well.
Oh yeah.
Right, moving over the border to Italy. Mr. Dupe, how are things going at Roma?
Wow, we've just entered November and we're still unbeaten in the league, top of the league now. Juve have actually lost two games, not against us. We don't play them till, I think, Boxing Day we don't play them till, or maybe a little bit later. But yeah, absolutely fantastic, playing 5-3-2, and we seem to be getting results. But we're still conceding a little bit, but we're not losing. I don't know why we're not losing, but we're not losing. We're through to the Champions League with a knockout round of a game to spare. Probably the highlight of the week, we beat Inter 4-1. Nice little result, to be honest.
That's good stuff. Are you still persevering with Nangolan behind the striker?
No, we're playing a flat three in the midfield now. He is a bit of an arse. I said it last week and I say it again. Like, there's so many players that he could tutor, and it would just make that little kid's world, and yet he just won't do it. He won't do it.
Oh, well. I guess you can persevere, or you can just
sell him
to do his own
just
thing.
Sell him.
Sulk.
Sell him. I mean,
sell him.
At the moment, the club itself, and this is obviously before my time, I'm not going to say that I'm that bad at finance management, but we're losing £3 million a month. So
what's that from? What's causing you to hemorrhage that much?
I only noticed it right at the end of last stream, so I haven't actually looked into it fully. So I will look into it a bit more in the week. But something's not right there. Something's not right.
I'm not sure. I agree with that fiscal responsibility from Roma there, but never mind.
Well,
Mr. David Azzopardi, sorry, dude. You wanted to?
No, all I was going to say is it just means that the Nangolan sale, I won't cry too much about it now. You know, if we sell him and get a load of money and sort our finances out, that's all we need.
Beautiful. Right, Mr. Dave Azzopardi, you've made a return to Twitch this week. How are things going with your, I suppose, replacement of Arsene?
Yeah, so, well, to start off with, I haven't uploaded any videos. If you do follow me on Twitter, I've had a bit of a nightmare. Seem to have lost the wall save. We're still doing some work to try and recover it at the moment. But
see, Dave, I was trying to make you seem competent and not mention it, but it's fine.
You know,
you've thrown yourself under the bus, so
for
you
the,
can carry on.
For the listeners,
that's what happens when you save and reload the finals.
Here we go. The wall save, obviously, since winning the Europa League, I've not actually touched it since that. So I've jumped onto Twitch this week and it's gone pretty well, bar a little technical blip last night. We've done a few streams with Arsenal, obviously the Mercy Arsene save. And we're unbeaten as well, similar to sort of Dupe. We've done quite well so far. I think I'm sort of heading into mid to late September. And I've signed, well, the three players that I signed were Fekir, De Ligt, the centre-half from Ajax, who I've not actually used, and there was a guy called Torreira, I think. Can't 100% remember the team I signed him from. But yes, I'm playing like a three at the back with a wing-backs system, two central midfielders, one attacking midfielder, and two strikers. And it's working really, really well. But yeah, still unbeaten, doing all right. I'm hoping that we can continue.
Yes, yeah, I'm just about to say it's interesting that the three of us are going with a three at the back formation. As I didn't say before, I'm using three at the back as well with wingbacks, doing like I said, a Bielsa style 3-3-3-1 technically.
Yeah.
But how are you guys finding it with your three at the back? I'm still figuring the tactic out, and I don't know whether it's player instructions or team instructions and stuff. But
I did it right at the start of this game with the wall save, and I went half a season unbeaten, and then it sometimes happens where it's just one game I lost and then I went on a little losing streak and I've not touched it since then. So I thought, with me being so successful with sort of, let's say, standard tactics, I thought I'd try it again with a slightly stronger team in Arsenal. And it's doing all right. We're creating a lot of chances, but probably not putting away as much as I would have wanted to. And as you say, I'm not 100% sure if that's player instructions or team instructions just yet.
Well, we're quite lucky. Being over in Italy, they'd normally play a three at the back system anyway. So that's kind of where we went for that suit. But I found actually playing against a 4-4-2 is, we really struggle with the two banks of wide players. We really struggle against that. But then they don't play 4-4-2 a lot in Italy, so we don't need to worry about that.
Yeah, I played three at the back with Shakhtar as well, which was good fun, having a couple of Valentes in front of them. I noticed Pine's been doing it in his Liverpool save as well. So it'll be interesting to see how we kind of all end up with three at the back systems.
I think the thing that I am enjoying a lot about it at the moment, it really gets the best out of Bellerin as well. Obviously, Bellerin has got absolutely tons of pace, and the amount of times he's getting down the wings is just unreal, and I'd assume he's going to get a big number of assists this year, hopefully.
See, big boys do it with two at the back, like I did at Recreativo, which worked for a couple of seasons until I got until I think the level found me out more than the tactic. Although I don't think I was overly sort of particularly overpowered in the division I'd started in. It just seemed to completely overawe teams. I've also gone with a slight amendment to my tactic. I've been playing a 4-4-2 or variant of, and I've gone to three at the back more recently as well, purely to try and work around my rather weak midfield and sort of build from a solid back line and then use the wings to attack.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's an approach that I've never used before, that I can, for any length of time anyway. And it's, what I'll always tend to do is try and find the right tactic for the players. I'll never go in and try and force players into a tactic, but I was really inspired by a few things I've read by a few kind of bloggers, as Rovers, Merigido, and V. Medeiros wrote some really good articles on Bielsa style tactics and philosophies and things like that, and really made me want to do it. And it's fun. It's fun trying to figure out a different way of playing rather than how I'd normally do it. There's a lot of thinking on my feet in games and seeing how things kind of break open within the game and how it's affected by opposition tactics, rather than kind of trying to build a tactic to overpower a team. It's like trying to build a tactic to play a certain way and then work around their weaknesses that you're forcing. It's fun. It's a lot more in depth than I've gone in a long time, and it's very fun. Although watching it in extended highlights means that I tend to swear a lot at the match engine, so it's not good for my blood pressure.
Mr. Joel, how are things going in the West Ham neck of the woods?
It's been interesting. Just gone into the 23-24 season, finished fifth last season, which I think, as we kind of discussed last week with my little tracker, I was expecting 56 points with my predicted outcomes, ended up with 70, which is pretty stunning, to be fair. I think a lot of that came through some of the signings. I mean, Strootman was instrumental in the middle of the field for me. What a free transfer he turned out to be. Added Wilfried Ndidi. I know Dan got straight in when I was looking for an N'Golo Kante-esque type player. Didn't actually think I'd get him, but I used the teach pursuit, as I think it's now been coined, and managed to get him. Got to the end of the season and obviously needed to bring in some new recruits. Leicester had been relegated, so I've brought in Damari Gray and Harry Maguire for $30 million for both, which I think was really good business. Damari Gray is an absolute beast on this game. And Harry Maguire, English centre-half, why not, while he's there? It's going well and I'm enjoying the save still.
Which position are you playing Damari Gray in, Joe? Is it like a flat right midfielder or an attacking right midfielder?
I'm playing him at the moment. I've only played him in three games and he's been in like the AML position as a winger, natural in. But he'll easily swap to the right if Ontiveros is obviously injured or he's out. I think it's Pozzo from Sevilla, but he's been injured, so I've not had a chance to kind of get him in yet. So I like to have the two players per position, and then it's nice that the wingers, or inside forwards, whatever they are, can kind of all interchange.
Yeah, Damari Gray is just absolutely unreal. In the wall save, he's by far one of the most pivotal players in that. Like, in the match engine, it's just class watching him just run past defenders. It's just ridiculous. Yeah, and
17 million.
The goals and assists he gets are just unreal. I think I paid $30 million for him at the time, but he's worth every penny, to be fair.
He must have had quite a bump since I signed him last year, because he wasn't particularly great. He was fairly mediocre. I think he got a few England caps, but nothing much more than that. I'm disappointed by the lack of sort of Ndidi puns used there, Joe.
I done it on Twitter and I got absolutely rinsed.
It's almost as if I planted that seed for you there. Right, of course, if you do want to track,
indeed he did.
there we go, there's his one. No more.
That's enough.
If you do want to track anyone's progress, you can check out all of the links as usual from the from each of us in the description of the podcast. Time to move on to our team meeting, though. And as usual, we start off with the poll results, which we asked you, as we're at that time of the year, we want to know how you approach the end of season push. Do you make your players play through the pain barrier, or do you rotate, meaning you may play a lesser skilled player? Too many P's. As always, discuss below in the comments. We did ask, and as we have been doing, this will centralise our discussion, your comments will anyway. So 66% of you said rotate players, which is quite interesting, really. I guess when we put this out, I kind of expected more of an even split, but it seems to be quite a resounding victory for the rotation policies and Rafa Benitez lovers of us all, I guess. So it's interesting to see sort of the comments looking, obviously because of the split, focusing a lot on the rotation, but more importantly, the reasons why and how. There's been a particular amount of comments about the use of young players and trying to sort of, I guess it comes from a club DNA perspective, that they're trying to blood the players in. Does anyone else sort of agree with that approach? Is that something that people do when it comes to sort of the crunch time? Does it depend on the scenario? Like, if you're going to be mid-table anyway, do you just don't care? Or is it a case of, if you've really got sort of crunch fixtures coming in, do you tend to, try and get your key men in as much as possible regardless?
It kind of depends on the on what games are coming up and how thick and fast they're coming. I've got a bit of a general rule personally that I never really like to play players that are under 95% fitness. That might seem a bit high, but for me, it almost forces my hand into a bit more rotation or more rest days from training or things like that. And I've not had too many issues with injuries this year in a version of the game that is apparently broken with it. So maybe it's a bit down to that. And I also always keep an eye on the game workload that players have got and how susceptible they are to injuries as well. Now, it was really easy to do. I've only done two saves this year. I've done the Red Star save and I've just started this one. With the Red Star save, it was really easy to rotate players because domestically, I could play my B team and my kids and win every game. I'm finding it a lot harder with this save with Bilbao, because I've got about three or four players in the reserve, like on the bench, that can maybe play against weaker sides in La Liga. other than that, he needs to be the top 11. And I'm struggling a little bit to keep players fit and keep them motivated and keep them playing well. Going forward, it is going to be the perfect opportunity to play those promising youngsters and get them first team football. So yeah, I think for me, it's always that I'll keep my players rotated to an extent, but I'll always cancel training, give people time off, take top players off after 60, 70 minutes if we're winning a game to keep players fresh. So you've always got them available there if needs be, even if it's off the bench, you know, in big games.
I agree with Dan. I think it depends on the situation, depends on if my season is over, say, for example, like 5-6 games left, I'm safe from relegation, but I'm not really pushing for anything. Obviously, I want to get the best league position possible, but at the end of the day, it happened a couple of times in the Wallsave where I had a few players, I wasn't really sure what I was going to do with them in the next season, so I thought I'd give them a few games to see what they can do. But a lot of the time, I just try and play the best team possible whenever I can, to be honest. If fixtures are sort of every 3 or 4 days or every 7 days, I always play my strongest team. I very, very rarely find the need to rotate. Similar to Dan, though, if a player's sort of like under 93, 92 fitness, that's probably when I'll swap them over. The one comment that I've just seen on the pod, though, which made me laugh just then, I'm going to beep out because there's quite a bit of swearing in it. It's from heel underscore Matt Q, Matt Quinn. I rotate all beeping season long ever since this beeping a medical centre beep came in and ruined the game. In one season, I had a squad of 24 where 19 of them had at least 1 6-week injury and had 6 4-month-plus injuries. Injuries have become a joke. But I don't. To be fair, I saw a lot of people complaining about it at the start of the year. But I've not really had many major injury issues this year. So I don't know if I've just been lucky or if Matt's just pushing his players too hard.
Adapt to it.
And get your staff right.
Without sounding wrong, I'm touching wood as we speak, because I haven't had a long-term injury issue at all. I'm probably one of the worst people that for rotation. If you look down my Roma squad now, I think we've played about 13 games in the league, and I will 100% guarantee there's going to be at least 8 of them that have played all 13. If my strongest team are there, I'm playing them. When we finish the game, I'll always give them a couple of day rest. If it's quite a bit longer, I'll give them a 3 day rest. I just don't, you know, I get my tried and trusted, I get my favourites, I just let them do the business, and it does seem to be working, but I think it's going to come and bite me in the ass at the end of the season. But we'll worry about that then.
Yeah, a couple of interesting bits here. I mean, Dan saying about when he was at Red Star playing his B team, I was very much the same at Shakhtar. You got the opportunity to play any players you wanted to develop in the league because you would just dick on them. And then what Duke was saying there about not rotating people, I mean, it's very easy just to keep playing them, but rest is really important. I don't know how many people actually use that rest function. I'm always looking at the calendar, and if I have a week, they're always going to get kind of a three-day period. And it tends to be in the second half of the season, not the first half.
To be fair, I automatically always have rest after match day on. I mean, when it does come really, really vital, I will, as you say, sort of cancel training on a few of the days to give rest days. To be fair, I know I said earlier, I don't rotate massively, but even with this Arsenal save, I'm almost playing a B team in Europe and still getting the results. I did it even with Wolves. It sort of annoyed me towards the end because when I was playing the knockout games, we were still smashing teams with my first team. And I just thought, if I played one or two of these first teamers in these group stage games, some of these could have hit 35, 40 goals throughout the season, which sometimes, I know at the end of the day, I'm still winning the games, but I always like to sort of hit higher records as well throughout the season.
I think that's the thing, is if you've got the luxury of having a deep squad with a lot of talent, it's really easy to keep your players fit. It's really easy to stop them getting injuries. It's really easy to keep your players happy as well, because you can just keep them rotating and coming in and coming out. As everyone's just said there, resting is key, and it's something that I can only really remember doing it in the last year or two, over the last couple of versions of FM. But I'm almost the opposite, though. When you say you've got a week off, you'll give your players more time off. I'll keep the training then. It's when we have less and less time between games is when I start cancelling training. If we've got a game every 3 days, no one's training for a week. No one's training for 10 days, maybe 2 weeks, because everyone's playing and there's going to be people coming and rotating. If people are on the bench all the time, they're going to be training. But Yeah, it's when there's long periods, if there's weeks between games or a week between games, they're training all the time. I see that as the time to get the hard work in for the tactic and the hard work in for fitness or team cohesion or whatever it is you're training at the time. And when it's coming to, you know, thick and fast game time, training, you know, you do the training on the pitch.
Is anyone like particularly meticulous with their preparation, particularly when it comes to end of season run-ins? Do you look at the fixture list and say, actually, I've almost like pre-prepared the teams that I'm going to go and play with, like assuming you don't get any injuries that scupper any of these plans? Does anyone actually go ahead and actually assign a squad way ahead of time? So you're looking sort of 6 to 7 games before the season ends and actually going through and planning precisely who you're going to play against who, whether it be because of a particular weakness that you're trying to protect of your own or a weakness of the opposition you're trying to attack or any other reasons?
Not necessarily like writing out a team for every game, because you never know what's going to happen with injuries or suspensions and things like that, and that could throw a curveball totally. But I'll look at the more important games or the most difficult games. Obviously, that depends on where you are in the league. The most important games, if you're at the bottom of the league, they're going to be against the easier teams or the teams closer, nearer around you. If you're at the top of the league, you're going to want to save your best players for the biggest games, for the top of the table clashes. But I will look over the running and the teams we're playing and kind of take a mental note of, right, there's 3 or 4 days between those two. There's 2 days there. We can rest him there against this weaker team and we can have my best players there. We can bring in some kids. Just kind of have it as in the back of my mind rather than a script almost. Because obviously, like I say, things can change at the drop of a hat.
See, I always find with the promotion and the relegation, it's always tough to, with those last couple of games, to rotate for me. I always find the best thing to do is short-term pain for a long-term gain. You know, play all these your best players as much as you can. Let's get the points needed to either keep yourself in the division or get yourself in the division above. There's no point having a load of happy players that have played every game they want to play and they're fully fit, yet we're in the league below because we haven't played our best side. But it's a tough one, isn't it, really?
We touched on it earlier that obviously I try and do my projections of where I want to be, you know, against, you know, what points I'm picking up against which teams. And it's, you know, you are kind of preparing every game of who's going to play and what. Similar to Dan, he's got his 95% limit. I do mine on 90. I try and build my squad having the 2 players per position. So I'm normally quite comfortable that I'll have players that I can rotate in. But yeah, you are always looking for which team you want to play, which players against, you know, if you want to be playing. I often go down to like 2 DMs and I want fast wingers and sometimes I want inside forward. So that can depend on, you know, exactly what your opposition is doing, and that, you know, forces you to pick certain players for certain games.
Yeah, going back to what Matt said regarding the sort of looking ahead at fixtures as well. I don't look ahead as far as for sort of 5, 6, 7 games, but I normally do look at like take the next 2 or 3 matches into consideration. For example, on the Arsenal save, I had a match against like Stoke or something, and I thought, you know what, I could, well, the first team was fit, and I thought, you know what, we could play first team here. But then I'd look at the next game, and it was Manchester United in the Carabao Cup. Now obviously the League Cup's not a massive tournament, but at the end of the day it's still something that I'd want to win, and Stoke should be a winnable game even with a rotated squad. So I always take the next game also into consideration. But regarding sort of the fitness thing and the rotation thing as well, what I tend to do a lot is, if I know I'm going to maybe rotate players in the next week or so, is just to make sure they're all match sharp as well. So whenever I get that sort of thing in the inbox regarding letting players play for the under-23s and whatnot, if they're not match sharp, I normally give them at least 45 minutes just to help their match sharpness and condition a little bit as well.
There's a really interesting point by @Blumberbun on Twitter, and he's raised sort of something about the AI and they don't tend to rotate. Is that anything that others have noticed? I've seen quite frequently in the past couple of seasons where I've come against teams where they're actually genuinely starting injured players, like who are on the amber injured. It basically, that, as far as I see it, that's a target for me to put them on hard tackling and break them. But I don't know if anyone else has seen the similar thing.
I've seen it a lot this year, but, and I always sort of think I've got to beat these with this now. There's teams starting with like 85-80% sharpness and stuff, and as you say, the odd one where they've got like the amber injury sign as well. So I have it's not like not common. I've seen it a lot this year as well. So it is strange. But at the same time, I sometimes see the team and the subs with the same condition as well. So I'm not sure. Not sure what it is really.
Yeah, I can only but agree. I've seen a lot of the orange amber. One thing I did notice in our intergame, the intergame we played, they didn't play Icardi, so I just assumed he was injured or banned. No, he was absolutely fit as a fiddle. They just didn't play him. So maybe they do rotate. Maybe they thought I was going to be easy.
Yeah, it's similar. I've noticed. I don't know. Maybe I and we, it seems, put too much of an onus on match fitness and match readiness and stuff, because certainly I've lost to teams that I should be beating on a purely fitness state. I'll have wingers running past me on 40% fitness. It's like, well, against my newly fresh left back. So maybe it's a little bit of that, but maybe it's a little bit in the, like, some of the new traits for managers that you get. I've noticed a lot of new traits for AI managers, and you'll have like rotates or always play strongest 11 or will not use subkeeper and things like that. So maybe it's something along those lines. But yeah, it's something that I've noticed. But yeah, when you see the injuries or people on low fitness, you crunch them.
I guess the one thing we haven't really touched on, and I'm not going to say it's the elephant in the room, but I guess it also depends on your personal preference tactically. Obviously, if you've played a pressing game for an entire season, your players may well be a bit more knackered come the end of the season than other teams, particularly if you play like me and Joe do, where you only have basically two players per position and maybe the occasional youth player who's ready for first team football. And so when you are getting to this crunch time, there is a chance that this pressing game has screwed you over to a certain extent, and maybe you actually have to back off the gas a little bit. Or I noticed, particularly as like at Blackburn, although I play predominantly on the counter, I've been heavily pressing teams to make sure we win the ball back quickly, to prevent any issues. I noticed particularly on counter that you sit back and try and absorb a lot of pressure, but your players are pretty anemic when it comes to actually stopping them getting towards your penalty area, and that's the way I sort of try to prevent that from happening. But the thing I did notice was that particularly the players that are higher up the pitch were getting a lot more tired a lot more quickly, and I was having to actually rotate or at least substitute them a damn sight, like 60 minutes into a match I'm having to substitute them, which isn't really great. And coming the end of the season, I noticed it was even like sort of 50 minutes, even maybe even less for some players.
Again, I think that falls under like how the squad management and training and rest and all that kind of stuff. And obviously, players have got a natural fitness and a stamina rating, but I think it's just how about that season-long rotation. And similar to how I will very rarely, if ever, start a player that's under 95% fitness, unless it's my best player and it's a big game. When people start to hit 70%, I'll start to look at who I can bring on for them around the hour mark. Once you get below 65, you're coming off, because the way I see it is you can't run, you can't press your man, and all the tactics I've done have been really high press in your face tactics. So if you can't do that job, then you're coming off the pitch. But then again, like I say, I've seen wingers on 40% sprint past my freshly newly substituted on left back. So does it make any difference really? Who knows?
Ultimately, it doesn't matter, does it? Anyway, of course, thank you very much for your contributions and involvement with the poll. It helps us out every week. And also, I actually really like the way we now do this, and that we get the community involved, and your interaction completely informs the pod. So it's really good, awesome stuff. And of course, if you're not following the Twitter account, you bloody well should be. And it's at Five Star Pod, if you weren't aware of that. The link to which will be in the description below.
Get involved with our poll.
But now, it's arguably people's most favourite part of the podcast. There may be no cheerleaders in skimpy skirts or local oddballs trying to hit the crossbar with an oversized inflatable, but we do have
Curtis Quiz!
Well then, time to write my last quiz. So I do apologise about the last one. But I've been left in charge of Curtie's quiz. So we're going to kind of follow Curtie's kind of guidelines as he normally does. So as the team meeting is about promotion and relegation, I thought it was best for the quiz to follow suit. But before I fire all these questions at you, let's run through the rules. First to shout in gets to answer. If you're wrong, it'll be opened up to the floor and you'll be subject to the Viking Dan Rohr, who we have in our presence today. Hello, Dan.
Hello.
Which is actually a minus 1 point. So we all strapped in and ready to go on with this little journey.
Let's do it.
Let's start where Curtie always starts, and that's with question number one. In 2009, too good to go down, Newcastle United were relegated with a Newcastle legend at the helm. But who did Shearer... Dan? Dan?
Yes!
Who did Shearer take over from? I have to pass it.
Minus 1 point.
Sorry, is Google up.
Who did Shearer replace to be put in temporary charge of the club after the original manager took sick?
Nerd?
Joe Kinnear is correct.
Shout. That man loved the press conference.
Question number two. Managers often talk about the magical 40-point mark. But Hull City in 2008-2009 and West Ham in 09 and 10 stayed up with a record fewest amount of points. How many points did they get?
Joe? It's a guess. 36.
Minus 1 point.
Screw it, Dan.
Dan?
35?
Correct.
Yes.
Oh, eh?
Is that my first ever correct answer?
I think it might be, you know.
We have some kind of celebratory music.
Get your tits out.
Westward.
Question number three. In 2014, with 6 games left, 7 points away from safety, Sunderland needed a miracle to stay up. That miracle happened in their final 6 games, drawing 1, winning 4, securing survival with a game to spare. But which manager was in charge of this almost... Dave?
Was it Di Canio?
Minus 1 point.
Nerd.
Oh, no.
Nerd?
Gus Poyet?
Correct.
Oh,
I was going to...
Unbelievable, Jeff.
The end of the question, the end of the question was there, who actually was... he was sacked live on TV this before.
Oh, I remember that.
His Brighton job. Right, okay, it's hotting up. In 2011, Birmingham City scripted one of the most memorable moments in their history when they got the better of Arsenal in the League Cup final at Wembley. But things didn't work out for them. Birmingham City could not survive fierce competition in the league and were relegated to the Championship. But which manager left the club at the end of the season to go and manage arch rivals Aston Villa?
McLeish.
I didn't even hear you say Dave, but yeah, you're right.
I did say it.
I trust you. I trust you, son.
McLeish.
Thanks for that, Phil.
I was so involved in the question, you see. I don't want to muck up, so sorry, I didn't hear that. Talking about winning cups and getting relegated to the Championship, in 2014, guided by the Spaniard Roberto Martinez, Wigan Athletic won the FA Cup versus Manchester City with a late header from Ben Watson. But which Argentine got sent off after a second yellow card?
Nerd? Pablo Zabaleta.
Incredible, nerd. That was proper trying to just tease you in every way, shape, and form.
I literally was about to say, Martinez, Wigan, Ben Watson.
I thought that question very well.
Take my points!
Okay, so we are on question at number six, flying through. In 2013, the playoff semi-final second leg between Watford and Leicester saw quite possibly the greatest 20 seconds of football, which started with a penalty save by Almunia. The ball was cleared upfield and Troy Deeney finished a fine move and put Watford through to Wembley. But which current Brighton player missed that penalty?
Dave.
Nerd.
Joe. I think that was Nerd.
Anthony Knockhart.
That is correct. I do apologise, Dave, but I think that was
closer.
Nerd.
I think I need to speak louder, I do. I don't think you can hear me.
Pardon?
Anthony Hopkins.
Okay, so question number 7. This year has seen loads of records being broken, including the first manager to win 8 promotions in the professional leagues. Name that manager. You're going to kick yourself.
Dave. Warnock.
I said Dan.
Oh, did you say Dan? I didn't hear you.
I actually didn't hear that either, to be fair.
I didn't. No one heard you, Dan.
I genuinely didn't hear you.
No.
If nobody else heard you, sorry, Dan. I do apologise, mate.
Is it Colin?
Colin?
Yeah, Warnock.
Oh, of course it is, Dave. Well done.
Yes. I thought it was a trick question.
Gypped.
I do apologise.
You should be my first ever positive point score.
I am sorry, Dan. I genuinely didn't hear you.
Did anyone hear Dan? I didn't.
Pardon?
I heard me.
In question number 8, right, let's get this shower shite finished. Right, in question number eight, in December 2008, Phil Brown, manager of Hull, gave his halftime team talk on the pitch at Manchester City on Boxing Day. He saw his side were 4-0 down after 36 minutes, even though Hull at the time was sat in 6th. Fast forward to the end of that season, they narrowly avoided relegation to the Championship by just a single point. But which Northern side ended up being behind Hull by 1 point? Any takers?
Dave? Massive guess. Middlesbrough?
Minus 1 point.
Ah,
that's who I thought.
No one?
The North is a big place.
It is, but I had to narrow it down slightly. Northeast?
I'll bet you on it.
Joe?
Newcastle
is correct.
Yeah. It was one of them.
Question number 9. At the end of the 2009-10 season, saw Portsmouth lose its place in the Promised Land. 4 seasons later, and they found themselves playing in League 2. But which manager was in charge of the final day of the season when they got relegated from the Premier League?
Dan? Tony Adams?
Minus 1 point.
Oh, I thought that you got it there.
Joe?
This
is a get. Was it Paul Cook?
Minus 1 point. Managed some big sides, Joe. Some of the biggest, like West Ham. No takers? Ex-Chelsea manager?
Dave? Avram Grant. Come on.
Grant is correct.
Yes.
I'm giving these points away. I think, too fair, unless Nerd literally blows his head off, I can't see how he loses this, so just sit back, Nerd.
Spoilers.
Come on.
Question number 10, the final question, right. At the end of the 2007-2008 Premier League season, a team finished with 1 win, 8 draws, 29 losses, ending with 11 points, a Premier League record for the lowest points. Who was that team?
Dave.
Joe.
Dave.
Derby County.
Derby County is correct. You're looking at me funny, Joe, but that was definitely Dave.
It's definitely me.
And that rounds the quiz off. So, in last place, joint last place, with minus 1 point, is Joe and Dan. just your own.
Dan, holding everyone else up, mate. Holding everyone else up.
Yes.
in second place, Dave, with 3 points. Congratulations,
really?
Dave.
Yeah. I got 2 minuses as well.
You did. You did very well. And Matt got 4 points to win the quiz. Well
Cheat.
Done, Matt.
No jokes.
Well done, Matt. Bad son.
Well done. I mean,
masterful
that's insane.
Quiz. Masterful quiz, Mr. Dupe.
Thank you.
Yeah, good work, man.
Very well researched. Congratulations.
I spent a lot of time on that.
Horribly worded. It was great.
I didn't know the internet. I didn't know the
and
internet.
And only 9 questions off courtesy. Right, it's time for a bit of a Q&A, and to buck the trend, we've actually picked up a really good question from the WeStream FM Instagram feed. I know, if you didn't know that was a thing, we are indeed on Instagram, the link of which is in the description. So this is a question from Lucky Hookie. Do you ever find it hard to stop playing a save when the new FM game comes out? Sort of semi-timely, we're getting closer to sort of the announcements. They're normally August-ish, aren't they, when we start getting new game stuff releases?
It's only been out 6 months, son.
halfway yes. through. For me, to be fair, no. Well, very rarely. I think it's happened sort of once where I'm still sort of in a save by the time the new one comes out. But to be honest, a lot of the time, as I say, 90% of the time, I'm sort of already sort of done my saves. I've had a couple of weeks break from FM and I'm sort of ready for the new game to drop. I think the only save that it happened was I was like doing a journeyman save. I was about a year in. I was with Whitehawk and had an amazing regen. But that's the only, that is literally the only reason I wanted to continue with it.
I can only but echo. I just make sure I good planning. I end the save ready. If it is, you know, I don't want to end it, but we end it just so we don't get that temptation. So if it's getting close to the end of the season, or when it gets to the end of the season and the new game's coming out in a couple of weeks, we will never start a new season.
We was playing the network save in Argentina when the beta dropped, and as much as we wanted to carry on, there's something about the drug of the new game that just pulls you in and you have to play it. I would have quite liked to have continued the network save, but you know, it's what FM does to you.
It's not promised that it's not broken anymore, isn't it?
trying to be positive here, Dan. You're ruining it.
Yeah, no.
We've got a reputation to uphold.
Fired.
No, it's. I think it, with all of us, obviously, with us broadcasting or making videos of stuff, we're always almost two or three saves ahead. So I've already got my first two FM19 saves planned, and I know the kind of runtime of what I'm doing now. So it's kind of in the scope, like it's already planned out for it. So I've never got to the point where a new game comes out and I'm taken aback by how long it's taken. It's kind of, I've already planned for where it's going to be and where it's going to end and how it's going to come in at the end of it. There are saves I miss.
Saves you miss.
Yeah.
I mean, for the first time, I've actually not got a plan at all for the next game. And it's weird, but quite nice. I remember in FM16, when FM17 was just about to be announced, I thought I'd planned my Blackburn save to end perfectly, and I wasn't really quite ready to let it sort of finish. I'd just won the Europa League, and it was sort of in the natural sort of progression where we're going to get the money from that, and then maybe challenge for Champions League the following year. So I was a bit reluctant to let it go. But I still have the save. In fact, I keep every save since I've started using like cloud storage systems to keep hold of them. I think I've got them all still, so I can always go back and revisit them should I want to. Because I think when you do leave a save, maybe a bit too early, or at least regrettably leaving it alone, it's sometimes nice for a bit of a nostalgia kick every now and again. I guess a polar question to this is from Sog Plays FM on Twitter. What save still gives you nightmares?
Swansea.
I can echo that, Swansea.
Yeah, it was.
I love Swansea.
It was actually like the first proper game that, well, the first proper save I'd streamed on Twitch. It was FM15, and we'd built. It was started out as a Sir Alex Ferguson challenge, so we took over them when they were 19th in the table. Got them up over, I think it was about six years maybe. Got them up to where we were regularly in European positions. And we finally got a decent amount of money to spend. So I brought in a lot of really good, talented young players, like early 20s, like Gabby Barbosa and players of that ilk. And obviously, with a lot of new players coming in, takes a while for them to bed in. We started the season horribly. I think after 8 and 9 games, we were down in the relegation zone. And I managed to keep hold of my job for a bit. Then went on a winning streak and started climbing the way up the table. And I remember vividly I was reading chat. We'd just beaten, I think it was Crystal Palace 3-0. I was reading chat, and then I saw chat going insane because they'd seen in the news, like flashing up on the screen, that I'd been sacked. So, like, and I got sacked from there and then tried to carry on the save, ended up at Brentford or something, and yeah, it just all kind of fizzled out from there. But yeah, that save, for going from the highs of where we got it to the, and like I say, I was fixing it, the team was getting used to each other, it was all coming together, and then they just pulled the plug. And I think they ended up mid-table for the next few years or whatever.
Ouch. That sounds like that's pretty pretty rough to dump you like that. Well, I've got to say,
Swansea, I don't remember it vividly at all. It's not scarred me for life.
Definitely don't have nightmares. I've got to say Swansea as well for the network save I did with Teach, the Sir Alex Ferguson challenge when we did. I just couldn't beat him. It was annoying. I just couldn't beat him, and it wound me up, and yeah, it was just too good. So that one gives me nightmares.
Like, sort of going back to what you said there, Dan, I did a network save with my friends a few years ago, and I can't remember the teams, but I remember I was Spurs, and we were about 6 months in, and somehow I was with Spurs in the relegation zone, and I kept my job. I don't know how I managed, must have been December at least, and I'm pretty sure we didn't drop, we didn't lose another game for the rest of the season. I somehow finished like 7th or 6th, despite being in the relegation zone towards Christmas. But like going back to what you said, like obviously with your good run there, saving Swansea to a degree. But my nightmare saves, I mean, people could probably list them without me actually saying them. I mean, I've had them on streams, had them on videos. I remember one with Blackpool.
Every save, isn't it?
Blackpool, which lasted about 3 episodes before I got sacked. I brought Dwight York in as my assistant at the start of the save. He got the job. Rotherham this year, I thought that would do well and got sacked. To be fair, though, Rotherham, the YouTube save was horrible because we did so well with them and then they just turned their back on us and got rid of us. It was horrible, horrible save.
I actually had my first experience of ever getting sacked on Football Manager, which was, it was Sutton, who I was attempting to save from getting relegated. I got well above my station. They hadn't won for about 20 games. And I thought, I've got 6 games, I can do this, it's fine, it's non-league, I can do non-league. I won 4 out of 6, but it wasn't enough. Results went against us and still got relegated. It was my first experience of getting sacked. And then I can't remember where I moved from that. I don't think the save lasted very long, to be honest. Not my finest hour, but I think basically don't bite off more than you can chew is the moral of that story. And final question for this week is from Sammy Duda FM on Twitter. Do you think having inexperienced keepers for England at the World Cup is a bad move? Now, there is, we can flavour this with a slight sort of Football Manager-ish tinge, I guess. And that if we were England managers in FM, who would we pick, having obviously seen Southgate's squad selection?
Just whoever the best keeper was at the time. And Joe Hart's not in the top 3 at the minute, so yeah, it's the same thing with the situation, the same in a game, it's the same one I go for. I've done a bit of international management on FM, usually kind of just a almost passive off stream or off recording type stuff, just to see what happens or try a tactic or see how it plays out. And I never look at caps. I don't think I've ever looked at a cap when selecting an international player. I look at how they play in and their attributes and whether they'll fit in the system. So yeah, fair play, you've done the right thing.
Yeah, I saw a tweet, I think it was today, from Golden FM, and he'd put, based on Football Manager, this would be the England squad, and he just based it on current ability, and Joe Hart is like the 5th or 6th highest rated English goalkeeper. There's like 4 or 5 keepers actually ahead of him in game.
I'm above him, yeah.
Well, yeah, similar to Dan, to be honest. I'd just pick him on form again. Obviously, there's always nice to have the element of experience there, which I can agree with. And I've seen people, Joe might disagree, obviously being a West Ham fan, but I've seen people address it in real life and saying he should be going for experience. But at the end of the day, what's that going to achieve? Like, what is experience, especially as a goalkeeper, going to achieve? If you're a good goalkeeper, you're a good goalkeeper. What, you know what I mean? So, same with Dan. I think even in game, I pick players on form, as I do with a normal Football Manager starting 11 anyway.
And just to butt in real quick on that, the only experience any English players have is of losing in major tournaments. So.
if you're good enough, you're old enough. There's nothing wrong with going with some youngsters. I mean, I would have Butland as my number one. But just kind of harking back to add a little bit of FM into it, 2 things. One, I think Freddie Woodman, was it, Matt, you had?
I had him twice.
And anyone that doesn't play a substitute goalkeeper triggers the life out of me.
Hello, Joe. Actually, I do it Italy. I do it Italy because we get 12. We get 12, so I might as well take a goalkeeper. I actually take 2 some weeks just for the fun of it, just to please you. I'm going to be really quick. If you want experience at the World Cup, take him on the coaching team. Don't take him in the squad. No more.
Wow. Succinct. Marvellous.
They did that with Beckham, didn't they, 1 year?
Yeah.
He was part of the trophy player.
Yeah, he was part of the management team.
Take him.
Yeah, take him like that. If you need the experience there, take him. Take Seaman. Fuck it.
Just take his head and shoulders.
I always take Seaman.
Did you see Sol Campbell's 11 that he'd have for the World Cup? It was probably the worst formation and squad I think I've ever seen in my life.
Matt said it earlier, big men play two at the back.
Literally. Three centre halves, no full backs, no wing backs, nothing, just a flat back three. That was it.
He'll be fine, mate. No wonder he's got teams knocking his door down. For
the excellent tackle there.
I was going to say, I'm surprised.
He's still going, I think.
I was going to say, I'm surprised he's actually been able to tweet that. I'm sure he's still sliding.
It was brilliant.
You don't have a choice, Dave. It's still going. at some point in the space-time continuum, that is going to meet Charlie Adams' penalty, and then
we need to make that our own meme. We need to make that. Five-star pod, put it on, and that's going to be a worldwide meme. Just Sol Campbell sliding.
I think it is already a meme. I think we've just recycled it. Anyway. It's getting towards that time once again when we need to wrap things up. So I'm going to let you guys plug away. Mr. Viking Dan, guest for this week. Where can people find you?
Viking Dan on Twitter. Viking Dan TV on Twitter. Sorry, I've got it wrong already. And Viking Dan
Seamless,
on
Dan.
Twitch
Welcome.
And YouTube.
Marvellous. Thank you. Mr. Dave?
Dave as a party on YouTube and Twitter, and Dave as a party FM on Twitch.
Perfecto. Mr. Dupe.
FM Dupe, everywhere you go.
Perfecto. There we go. See, I like the rhyming link there. Marvellous stuff. Mr. Friday Night FM, what about you?
Friday Night FM on Twitter.
Perfect. And you can find me at Nerdphonic absolutely everywhere. All the links for each of us, as usual, are in the description of this very podcast, as is the link to join the WeStream FM Discord server and the Instagram, which will definitely be there by the time this goes out to you lot. If you've enjoyed the pod, then please leave a review on iTunes, as it really helps us out. Make sure it's 5 stars for 5-star potential. If you listen to us on SoundCloud, then please drop us a follow and you'll be notified of when we next upload a pod, which is Mondays at 8 a.m. The 5-Star Potential Podcast is also available on most other podcast apps. This has been 5-Star Potential, a WeStream FM production, and we'll see you all next week. Say goodbye, folks.
Bye-bye. Bye, folks.
Goodbye, folks.